And you see in this industry, there are a lot of people who will grind themselves into a divorce because...
So the big question is, what are top agents doing to absolutely crush it in real estate, grow their teams and add more transactions year over year while so many struggle? To get the answers, we interview top real estate agents to learn their secrets to success. Listen, we believe every agent should make a minimum of $100,000 per year, and we're on a mission to make this happen. We've already helped over 100 agents achieve this with our coaching. So if you want to fast track your business growth, get to your first $100,000 in GCI or add another $100,000 in GCI using social strategies, then head over to go.eliteagentsecrets.com or you can just click the link in the description below. Also, just make sure to follow us, hit that subscribe button, and if you get any value from this at all, please tell a friend and leave us a review. My name is Andrew Dunn.
And my name is Peter Michael. Welcome to Elite Agent Secrets.
I know what one of the things about, I guess, topic one, I wanted to kind of roll into topic two. Hopefully they don't cross over too much, but they obviously do, which is about having a supportive, your second topic is about having a supportive partner and team. So I want to unpack whether that is your second secret to your success.
Yes. From the get-go, my wife has been outstanding, right? When, as most agents know out there, real estate is a 24-hour job. Evenings, weekends, nights, and as we were building what we were building, I couldn't have done it without her, right? I mean, if she wasn't on the same page as me in what we were building, the world would collapse around me, right? I mean, she is incredible, and I think that is the secret weapon in people who have marriage. I mean, obviously, if you're single and you're real estate and you don't have any relationship, like right there, like you can do whatever you want to, but in order to, you just have to have that that support and somebody who is there. And I mean, there's in real estate, you win a lot of them and you lose a lot of them, right? I mean, I could say I get every listing, every buyer, every offer I write, but you come home sometimes and are just demoralized, and then you have somebody who tells you how great you are and then sends you back out the door to do it again. So having a supporting partner is really valuable.
What do us lonely folks do? It's a real question, Spencer.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do us lonely ones who just got a love for race cars do?
Just keep working.
You know, it's interesting that this is one of your topics, Spencer, because my wife has always been supportive, right? As entrepreneurs, when we first start out, that is a commitment where if you don't have a supportive partner, they simply just will not understand what is required and why you're doing what you're doing. And the very least, the last thing you want to do is you have to explain yourself when you get home or when you're at home.
Right.
It is. You've just gotten punched in the face 15 million times throughout your day. And you are hoping to just come home, close the door and not get punched in the face. And you get punched in the face.
Right. Right. And when I look at it, so it's not only that moral support, but to be on that same page. Like, I mean, my wife and I go through our budget and look at the numbers of the business every single month, right? We have to be on that same page. If we aren't building towards the same ultimate goal, the same retirement, the same dreams, if we're going out there and like it just doesn't fall into line. So it's hard to have a marriage. It's even probably harder to be married to a realtor. But it is and you see in this industry, there are a lot of people who will grind themselves into a divorce because we'll have clients out there or friends who say, oh man, it must be so nice to be a realtor. You have all the freedom you need. And I always say, I have all the freedom to work 24 hours a day if I want to. Like, that's the freedom that we have in real estate, right? Yeah. And that's just one of those things where if we aren't on the same page, I mean, it doesn't work.
One of the things I think we're really touching on here, which I want to kind of unpack, is having a supportive partner is one thing. I think this also really what we're talking about is also setting boundaries, right? And communication, both with spouse and client. That's the other thing that this kind of coincides with, because if there's not boundaries set, if there isn't expectations set on both sides from, hey, this is what I can expect from me, you from you being your wife, and then you from you being your client, then everything will implode. because no one's got any rules that they're playing by now. And now it's like just basically a clusterfuck. Right? Like, what is going on? So how'd you do that? How have you overcame that?
Well, and it's interesting because it's always changing, right? When I was a solo agent, I had to start steering clients to day showings, or like, you know, you're doing everything and you're on showings all the time. You're like, I just can't be working every single night, every single weekend. So you start steering clients and setting expectations. This is when we can do it. Well, then I started at a team, and then I have people who, some of my teams are showing properties. And then we started saying we can show whenever you want to, but then it gets out of hand again, because then it may not be me, but it'll be the rest of the team. And so then it's a matter of setting that expectation. But every conversation you have has to lead to those expectations. I mean, we have an introductory buyers meeting all the time and with every single client to make sure that they know what to expect from us, and then we know what to expect from them at the same time.
So does that coincide with like a set schedule of like working hours then too? So now you are like, I'm available from 8 to 6, and 6 onwards I'm not, but 6 onwards you could get Mary. I don't know. And like, because you said you share a number and email and stuff, like, yeah, is it just everyone gets notified, and then after a certain time they know you won't respond and they'll get another person?
Yeah, we try in on my voicemail, you always have it set up to say when I'm going to call people back, and people know during the business day they can get a hold of us. In the evening, it, you know, goes to wherever it goes. So yes, it does create more of a boundaries. And I say it like I'm an expert, and it's always constantly learning, right? I wish I could say that I work 40 hours also, and I don't work 40 hours. I still work more than 40 hours, but it is a ever changing, ever evolving, and just making it better. And as the team gets better over the years and more experience, I mean, it really takes 2.5 years to have new team members fully firing, and as every time they get better, we're getting better, and then we can set those expectations and the times can change.
Well, one of the things that I have a follow-up question for you is, as you started obviously growing and as you realized that you can only do so much, what was the trigger for you to be like, okay, I don't think I can do this by myself? Was it a number of transactions? Because we have this thing that we are seeing that there's a certain number of either transactions or volume where most of us be like, okay, I think it's time for a little bit of help.
Right. And the question is, where is that threshold for people? For mm-hmm. people who are grinders, I mean, I'm driven. Okay. That's who I am. I'm sure I push that further than some people, you know, but all top agents push that further than some people. But for me, I couldn't get above the 10 million a year ceiling. I mean, I could just reach past it and come in. And that's my market depending. I mean, you're in California and you sell $2 million houses. Like, that is a different story. But kind of that 30 to 40 transactions a year was, yeah, I just couldn't quite at that point.
It's very interesting you say 30 to 40 because the number seems to be around 30 for most. And doesn't matter what market, doesn't matter what price point is.
Yeah, it seems to be 30. It's 30, yeah. People get to, and they're like, I'm burning out, man.
I just can't do it anymore. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that's a number.
Yeah. We had one guy, I'm not even joking, 200 he did as a solo agent. 200 in a year.
Okay, but you got to put it in a little bit of context.
What?
Young, handsome, single, charismatic, and all he did was work.
He's an Italian New Yorker, just like crazy hustle. And we met him, he came on the show, and he was like, dude, and he was like, just for perspective, I had no team. And we're like, well, what do you mean? You had TC and admin. And he was like, no, literally had no one. I wrote every contract, did everything. And everyone else is going, what? And I'm like, yeah. These guys have lost their fucking mind. When we had this amazing woman on, Jess, and she did 1 million in GCI as a solo agent in a year. And her price point was obviously a little bit higher. She didn't do as many transactions, but she made 1 million in income in a year. And then she was like, I'm getting a team. I'm doing
it. And so then you make that first hire, right? And you're doing 30 to 40 a year, and you put a stack. I mean, the first day she walked in, my first hire, I mean, I had 60 transaction folders on the table and said, go through these, help me out, figure out where these go. I mean, they were all closed transactions. Like, I just couldn't even file anything. Like, I mean, it just starts stacking up around you.
When it actually, you touched on it earlier, we've kind of unpacked the partner side, but with the team side, something you mentioned earlier is you're looking at like nearly 2 years for them to be like really dialed in and like firing all cylinders. I'm guessing ultimate trust, like, you know, they're just going to do their shit and you can walk away and you can, they're just happy.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit more about, I guess, the supportive network or process that you've built for onboarding agents? Because I know you're paying them just a little bit different, but one of the biggest retention issues in real estate is due to poor onboarding. So this is something we are heavily invested in, is like having great onboarding experiences, right, having roadmaps and figuring out the goals they want to achieve. Because we want to align ourselves with people like us, right? So people who join our team, we want that alignment, but we also understand that like they don't want exactly what we want. But if it's within the same realm, then the alignment is there. So I'm interested about your onboarding process and the training process when someone comes into your team and that kind of support.
Yeah, and we've gotten better at that. Initially, it was here's a folder, hope you figure it out, right? And we have a 12-week training program. We've recorded a lot of videos of different aspects of what we're doing. We have breakdowns of all the different avenues. It's a good training program. The flaws, my last two hires were not licensed agents when they came in. So it takes you to, you know, if you had somebody who actually had a real estate license, 12 weeks in kind of understanding how we do things would be great, but actually getting a license and learning everything at one time. I mean, they were overwhelmed for a while. We just kept on doing, but I mean, it is the other thing is the cross training, having different team members. It doesn't have to be me who trains everyone. And it's better if it's not me who trains everyone because they know what they're doing better than I do.
So when it comes to, I guess, that's an interesting point you bring up, actually, the cross training and I guess training on different processes, because everyone chips in to different parts of the process, does that not generate some kind of interesting situations where you've got people who aren't necessarily as experienced trying to help with other stuff because the really experienced person isn't available? Is that what takes so long to train up? That's why it's like a 2-year period, because it's to get everyone a very good knowledge base on every section. Is that the issue?
That's what I like. Understanding, I mean, we can get somebody to come in and say, you know, follow a checklist from A to Z, but to come in and understand what every piece of that checklist means and does, because every question is different, slightly different. I mean, we get the same general questions, but all of a sudden it's like, well, what does this mean in the title? Well, now let's figure out, like, not only do we know we're delivering the title to them or delivering the inspection report, well, what does this actually mean? So my experience is it's kind of that 2.5 years is where people start really like blossoming and not only doing their job, but helping with everybody else around you. And I think that's, to me, the problem with the pandemic is everybody, when you work remotely, you can do your job, but it's hard to do, to help out, to know what else needs to be done around there. And I think about these companies who do, who are going full-time remote. And I think it's going to be a struggle to get people to collaborate very much.
I actually 100% agree. I mean, a little bit of context. Back in December of 2020, so what's that, a year and a bit ago, I had 26 people in my team, fully remote. So like, that's not a small team, right?
No.
And there is... And I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but I'll just touch on one of the biggest things I saw over growing a remote team. And it's something that no one can really tell you unless you experience it. But like, there is definitely like mental health problems that start happening because people become lonely and they think about the freedom of being able to wake up and do the job and that freedom, but not having that human interaction is caused a lot of problems when people are in the office. You might not like one dude one day or whatever, but there is a camaraderie, there is this human connection that we need. It's not we want, we absolutely need it in our lives, which is why you tend to find happiness levels and stuff in general, if you're in a good office, a good environment, people tend to enjoy coming to work. They enjoy the experience because it's about the people, right? As much as it is enjoying what you do. I think remote companies are going to struggle. Is there going to be a solution? Potentially, we don't know. It's obviously very early doors. But I think for people that have never experienced it from a managerial standpoint, from an ownership, from a business owner perspective, there is a lot more challenges. And that's just one of them. Like, there is a lot of communication issues that go on. You know, it's like, what are you Zooming and using Slack or Messenger or whatever? Your project management tools stuff goes awry. You're all emailing clients. Like, there is so much going on there. When you're in an office, it's like, hey, Jeff, did you email Susan? Yeah, I did, mate. Cheers.
Absolutely.
That's the conversation. Like, that's me being real because I've done it. Like, I've been on the other end. And I'm like, when we got into the office and there was just a few of us, like the managers and the C-suite, and we sat around a table and we went out for basically like a long weekend and we all worked together. And this was kind of not, I'm not going to say post-pandemic, but with regards like later on in it, it was like in 3 or 4 days, we were like, we've crushed out more work than we do in weeks working alone at home, because we were just able to communicate so effectively, just talk to them across. And it's like, we were all happier. We went out and, you know, this is, I'm going down a bit of a rabbit hole here, but I do think... Because it's something that I think people don't appreciate. Like, they think it's going to be good. It's a bit like sweets and chocolate, right? It's like, they taste great, and then there's this afterburn. It's like, probably wasn't so good for you.
Oh, and by the way, if you're listening to this and you aren't making at least $100,000 per year in GCI and you're looking for a predictable system to get you there, then head over to go.eliteagentsecrets.com.